So I did something on the way here tonight that I've never done to prepare, I guess, for a lesson. I had two sermons prepared. I couldn't decide which one I wanted to do. So I remembered one morning at breakfast we were talking about casting lots and asking questions about that and stuff. And so I decided to pray about it. All I had in my truck was a dime. I took that dime and I flipped that coin, and whichever it landed on, heads or tails, was going to be the deciding factor. It landed on tails, so we're running with this one, okay? I'm excited to preach on a godly woman. And there's a reason, because my life has been surrounded by godly women. Even at a young age, my babysitter went to church with us. She would teach us VBS songs, has recordings of us singing as kids. My mother, I know, has spent many sleepless nights in prayer for me. She would drive me to churches before I could drive so that I could preach. My grandmother is the one that taught me how to preach. There have been a lot of men that have tried to take credit for teaching me how to preach, but it all began with my grandmother. I thought that she knew. I could have sworn she had been in a pulpit before preaching. She taught me how to preach. She taught me how to pray. She taught me how to sing. As a kid, when on Sunday nights before service, they would allow the young men to get up and lead a song. And I was leading singing before I could read. So I would sit on her couch every week, and we would memorize the first and last verse of a different song each week. When I think about the godly influences in my life, I think the number of women surpass that of men. And I don't know when this began, but for some reason in the church, almost, I don't know if we've intended to do this, I don't believe we have, but we viewed stuff like leadership and worship, like a man preaches, a man leads singing, a man prays, these things, and we've almost put that up on this pedestal. And then we leave our women wondering, well, what's my role in the church? We'll teach a class. Well, what if teaching's not my ability? Well, then just sit there and be quiet, right? No. No. My view on women, not in women's leadership, don't mistake anything I'm saying here, okay? I want to be very clear on this. My view on women has changed a little bit since I had two little girls, because I want my little girls to know that they're valued in the church. And I want my little girls to know that disciples are not just men. Disciples are women. And disciples have a role of going out and making other disciples and being a light in a community. And that's what I want my little girls to be. They're just as valuable, just as necessary in the Lord's church as we men are. And just because our roles are different, doesn't make one more valuable than the other. I don't think the Lord ever intended it to be that way. But tonight, I want to look at a godly woman who I think her prayer life can challenge not only our prayer life, but can challenge and change our day-to-day life. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, we read of the prayer of Hannah. Many of us are familiar with the story of Samuel. Many of us are familiar with his birth. We're familiar with his mother, Hannah. So I want us to spend just a few moments here tonight looking at the prayer of Hannah. Hannah would pray month after month, year after year. She would continue to wait on God to bless her with a son, with a child. All this time, though, she never stopped praying. You know, one time I had a counselor challenge me during some transitions in life. He said, right now in your life, Eric, is a period of waiting. He said, but there's two types of waiting. There's the type of waiting that sits back and does nothing, and then there's active waiting. He said, active waiting is where you're continually looking for opportunities to serve, where you're spending that time in wait, in prayer, and leaning on God, and sharpening your skills, etc., etc. I believe what Hannah was doing here in 1 Samuel chapter 2 was active waiting. I believe she was actively waiting on God to do something. And while she was being patient with God, while she was waiting on God, she continued month after month, day after day, year after year, to pour her heart out to God. Her persistent communication with God, I think it indicates to us a continuing, growing relationship with God. That during that time, her relationship with God had to continue to grow through that process. She had to be closer to God at the end of the process than at the beginning when she started this prayer. When she started praying to be blessed with this child. I think about the words of Solomon in Proverbs 15 and verse 8 when Solomon shows us that God delights in our prayers. He delights in our prayers. He wants us to communicate with Him. He wants that relationship with us. Even though He knows what we need before we ask it, He wants to know that we have that relationship with Him, that He is the first person that we go to when we need to talk to someone. When we need someone to lean on during a trying time. So I want us to look at Hannah's prayer real briefly and see what it is that we can gather from it to increase our faith. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, beginning with verse 1, then Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one beside you. There is no rock like our God. Do not keep talking so proudly or let your mouth speak such arrogance, for the Lord is a God who knows, and by Him deeds are weighed. The bows of the warriors are broken, but those who stumbled are armed with strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for food, but those who were hungry are hungry no more. She who was barren has borne 7 children, but she who has had many sons pines away. The Lord brings death and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and raises up. The Lord sends poverty and wealth. He humbles and He exalts. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ash heap. He seats them with princes and He has them inherit a throne of honor. For the foundations of the earth are the Lord's. On them He has set the world. He will guard the feet of His faithful servants, but the wicked will be silenced in the place of darkness. It is not by strength that one prevails. Those who oppose the Lord will be broken. The Most High will thunder from heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to His king and exalt the horn of His anointed." At the end of the day, when all problems came to pass, when there was frustration, when there was doubt, when there was a lack in understanding, Hannah knew first and foremost where to take her problems. And backing up in chapter 1 in verse 10, the text says that in bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and she prayed to the Lord. Year after year, Hannah goes to the house of the Lord with her husband to offer sacrifices to God and would suffer ridicule under the actions of Peninnah, who was Elkanah's other wife. Hannah was in despair. We're not talking about just being sad. We're not talking about frustrated. We're talking about grief. We're talking about despair here. Another woman who had all that she desired, a husband who wanted to do the right thing and take care of her, but had no control over giving her a child. But through all this pain, rather than running from God, she runs towards God. We've quoted many different scriptures throughout this year dealing with this concept. Mark quoted from 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, "Cast all your burdens or anxieties on Him." Why? Because He cares for you. We've looked at Philippians chapter 4, 6 through 7, "Be anxious, you know, in nothing but all things in prayer and supplication. Let your requests be made known to God." But there's something in the Psalms that I think paints an even more beautiful picture at times in our lives. Psalm 55 and verse 22. "Cast your burden on the Lord, and He will sustain you. He will never permit you to be moved." Cast your burden on Him. Give it to Him, and He's going to hold you up. He's going to lift you up. He's going to keep you firm. He's going to keep you immovable. You may sway, you may rock, but He's going to keep your foundation from moving. The other day when some heavy winds came through, I was looking at some trees. We've had 6 trees that are supposed to be cut down. So far, we've got 2 down. I don't know where my contractor is. If somebody on Facebook wants to share this and get this all around Jackson County, maybe he'll see this. I don't know where he's at if he's forgotten about me, but I need him to get those other 4 down before they land on my truck, okay? But I was watching those trees. Man, that wind, they were going like crazy. But then, like, as I go down the tree, I start at the top, and they're moving hard, and then it's moving. But as I get to the base, I see those trees standing firm. The roots are sustaining the trees. They're keeping the trees from being knocked over, keeping them from falling over. And I thought, that's exactly how life works for those that cast their burdens on God. For those that are planted by these living waters, people that have their lives deeply rooted in Jesus, that when life happens and it's rocking, and I feel like I'm being tossed every which way, as you start looking to the foundation, you see, it's not moving at all. Everything else may be moving, but that foundation is standing firm and is keeping you from toppling completely over. In the midst of her pain and uncertainty, Hannah trusted God's power and ability to work on her behalf. Despite all the naysayers, you know, I can probably hear it now, because the honest truth is this: people haven't changed. When you really look at people, people haven't changed. Thousands of years later, we're still dealing with the same problems. People still act the same way. Sin is still the same. It's just packaged slightly differently, but it's still exactly the same. People say, "Oh, when in my day, I didn't struggle with what these young people struggle with today." Yeah, you did. It's just packaged differently, to be perfectly honest. It's just packaged differently. Some of it's easier to access than it was in your day, but it's just packaged differently. It's the same thing when you get down to the root of it. I can just see it now. She goes to the temple continually in prayer, and people just sitting there saying, "I don't even know why she's bothering. God doesn't care about her. God's not listening to her. She's just continuing to set herself up for more disappointment. Why doesn't she just move on with this? Why doesn't she just forget it, leave it, and move on to something else and just accept it?" But no. She continues to put the faith in God's provision. That whether it be the exactly answered as she wants or answered in which the way God sees best, God's going to provide. His provision is what's best. I trust in His power and His ability to work on my behalf. If you look at verse 11 of chapter 1, "And she made a vow saying, 'Oh Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I'll give him to the Lord for all the days of his life. And no razor will ever be used on his head.'" Think about the humility here as she pours her heart out to God. She acknowledges herself as God's servant. I think about what James says in James chapter 4 in verse 6. Therefore, he says, "God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble." To the humble. I believe humility plays a huge role in God's answers to our prayers. And oftentimes with humility is one of those things where we look at it like we can't know whether or not we're humble. Like if I admit to you right now that I'm a humble person, you're like, "No, you're not. You can't do that. You can't say you're humble, because if you say you're humble, that means you're arrogant." Because, you know, but the honest truth is this. James even goes on to say, humble yourself. Whose responsibility is it to do the humbling of yourself? You. Oftentimes we say things like, "Well, I wish someone would humble them. Someone needs to serve them a big old piece of humble pie," right? And sometimes people and circumstances do humble us. But we have a responsibility to ourselves to know whether or not we're humble people. Just because you can acknowledge that you're a humble person does not make you an arrogant person by default. It makes you a self-aware person. And he says that he gives grace to those who are humble. to those who are humble. But he resists those that are arrogant, those that are proud, those that are boastful. And we see a woman here who literally pours her heart out to God, and she didn't care who was around to see it. Praying in the temple at that time was a little different than how you and I are used to praying. It was a little different than how Jesus taught us to pray, about going into our secret place and praying so that it's between us and the Father, that we're the only ones that see, that we're the only ones that know. But she didn't care. She didn't care what she looked like. She didn't care what anyone else was thinking. And she probably didn't care too much about the tears that were dripping down her face continuously as she poured her heart out to God. You know, when someone is in despair, when someone is hurting, when someone is looking for answers, when someone is looking for hope, they don't care what other people are thinking about them in those situations. They're not mindful of the tears. They're not mindful of if it's an ugly cry or a pretty cry, or if the makeup's running down their face. They're not mindful of those things. All they're mindful of is seeking hope in moments of despair. She didn't care about these things. She was humbled. She was broken. And she knew there was only one source in finding relief. And that was in God. She trusted that God was able to do this. And she knew that He was the only one who could hear her prayer and bring answers to her longing. If you look at verse 18 in chapter 1, then she went her way and she ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. And then skipping to verse 20, so in the course of time, Hannah conceived and gave birth a son, and she named him Samuel, saying, "Because I asked the Lord for him." She entered the temple discouraged, but she left the house of God with hope. With hope. Now, nothing against, you know, the hellfire and brimstone style of preaching. I've got many of those in my library of sermons, and I've been known to give a real doozy every now and then, okay? Nothing against preaching on sin, preaching on these things they need to be taught on. They need to be preached on. But over the past year, I've really put some time and study into worship and what worship is in the New Testament and the purpose of worship and things of that. And I find it interesting that one of the main passages that we use when it comes to worship, one, oftentimes many have been guilty of taking that passage out of its context. But there's something that we don't preach on or teach on, and it comes right before that verse in Hebrews 10:25 when he says, you know, not forsaking the assembly of yourselves, such as the habit of some. That's the you gotta be at church every time the doors are open verse, right? Read why he's writing that. He's trying to keep these people from leaving the faith. He's saying, look, you need each other. And right before that, he says, when you come together, consider how to what? Stir one another up for love and good works. You know what that means in one word? Encouragement. When New Testament Christians came together, they came together to remember what Jesus did, to gather around that table, to praise God, and to be encouraged because life was tough for them. Their faith was put into action throughout the week, so it was difficult. When we come into the house of God, I believe that we should leave here every single time with hope. Believe that. She went in discouraged. She left with hope. And I've been told that that's soft preaching. I don't think that's soft preaching. I think it's biblical preaching. Because these people needed to be encouraged. She needed encouragement. She came in despaired. And how many people come into worship despaired and they leave feeling even worse than they came in? I don't know about you, but I come in sometimes and life just doesn't work perfectly for me. Does it for you? Because if it does, I want to know what I'm doing wrong, because everything in my life doesn't always work out the way I planned it to, okay? And there are just some weeks that I'm just dragging to get through the door. And I'm just barely here. And I need to be stirred up, encouraged. Not kicked down even further and made to feel even worse than what I did when I came here. I think about what the Hebrew author says in Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 9, when he tells us that there is this hope that is an anchor for our souls. And that hope is Jesus, is who he's referring to. That no matter the uncertainties in life, no matter how difficult life becomes, no matter how questionable things in life are, I have this anchor to keep me secure, to keep me from being tossed to and fro. And it all centers around Jesus. And that's a truth that we need to cling to. This idea of having full assurance that God is paying full attention to your needs. She had full assurance that God was paying attention, that God was listening, was actively listening, not passively listening. That God knew every detail that she was saying, that God knew every need that she needed in her life, even had a clearer vision for it than she did in that time. We all know the end of the story. Hannah was blessed with a son, Samuel, and she prays to the Lord, committing the life of Samuel to him. As surely as you live, verse 24, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you, praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child. The Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life, he will be given over to the Lord. Hannah knew that there was great power in prayer. She knew that there was purpose in her waiting, and there was a blessing in the answer to her desire. And I think we need to be reminded of this truth, that God will never allow our pain and brokenness to have the final word. God will never allow our pain and brokenness to have the final word. In times of trial, frustrations, you take COVID and the pandemic and all this. And a lot of people, everything's coming to an end. It's been over a year and people are still doing this. And I'm like, yeah, it's been a year and it's been an exhausting year, but this too is going to pass. This too is going to be over at some point. God's not going to allow this brokenness and these things to have the final say. At the end of the day, God's going to have the final say. He's in control of our lives. He's in control of the things that are going on. The blessings in our life may look different than the way we imagine them to look. But I think we got to be assured of something, that there is great depth of faith, perseverance, and character that comes from those dark moments. And here's the thing about these lessons. Lessons like this, a lot of people think they're lessons that we need to hear while we're going through it. I'm of the opposite spectrum. Yeah, sometimes we need to hear it while we're going through it, but I think these are the lessons that prepare us to go through it. When you're going through challenges, nobody likes it, even though you know what it says when people come up to you and say, hey, I know life's terrible for you right now, but consider it joy, brother, when you fall into various trials and temptations. Know that it produces perseverance. I just want to slap people when they do that. I know what it says, okay? I know it says that. And my head says, believe it. But my circumstances and my head are kind of at war with each other right now. And I'm frustrated, okay? These are the passages that get you prepared for it. These are the thoughts that get you prepared for life and the things that are going to go. And the honest truth is this. I don't think anybody's life, if you really look at your life, think about it from we'll just pan back to the time you graduated high school. Think about your life from the time you graduated high school to now. Did your life play out the way that you thought it would play out? I mean, really, did it? No. I didn't marry the person I thought I was going to marry when I graduated high school. I don't have the career I thought. I don't have all these different things, that I had planned out. My life didn't work out the way that I had it planned. But now that I look backwards, because the way providence works, we don't understand providence when we're going through it. Providence doesn't look forward. Providence looks backwards. We look back on the circumstances, and it's almost like a puzzle that we can see being put together by God. And it's like, oh, there you were, God. I see what you did there. You knew I needed something that I didn't even know I needed. You know that this circumstance needed to happen so that I could be here. And life begins to kind of start to fit together, and you're like, ah, those were very uncomfortable times, but I see what you were doing there. I see what you were doing there. When we think about God's blessings, they oftentimes look different. They look different than we first imagined. But I think we've got to be remindful of some things that Paul teaches us. Paul teaches us to be joyful in hope, be patient in affliction, be constant in prayer. Be joyful. That doesn't mean be happy in hope. Happiness is circumstantial. Nobody is 100% all the time happy. Well, except for one person. There was a girl I went to college with. Her name was Brittany Peppers. Brittany was on the cheerleading team at Freed Hardeman. Brittany Peppers just sounds like a perky person, doesn't it? It was coming a monsoon one day. I had a class with Brittany. Brittany had never met a stranger. She knew everybody on campus. Or at least everybody knew her, okay? It was coming a monsoon out of nowhere. Brittany comes in looking like a rat that just came out of the sewer, okay? She was swamped. She didn't have her rain boots on, you know, that all young, you know, college girls wear their fashionable rain boots. And she didn't have her jacket on or an umbrella. She comes in drenched. And I'm like, here's the time. Brittany's not going to be smiling now, looking for it, you know. And she comes in with the biggest, boy, it's raining out there, ain't it, y'all? And I'm like, how are you always so happy? I would have turned around and went to bed, okay? Nobody's always that happy except for Brittany Peppers. Joy, though, isn't based upon circumstance. Joy is based upon a person. Joy is based upon my relationship with God, knowing who He is, knowing that He is in control of the circumstance. He says, be joyful in hope. Be joyful with that eager expectation that it's going to happen. Hope isn't, I wish. It's this eager, earnest expectation. Be joyful in hope. Be patient in affliction. I don't know about you, but during affliction, I want to get through it as quick as possible. I want to get through it fast. The thought of spending a year in a situation or two or three or even more drives me insane. No, Lord, I want it to pass quick. And Paul says, be patient during it. Let it run its course. You're going through it for a purpose. Something's going to come out of this. You're going to be better because of it. And he says, but during that time, don't be passively waiting. Be actively waiting. Be constant in prayer. I think about what Paul says later on in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 19. But my God who takes care of me will what? Supply all your needs from His glorious riches, which have been given to us in Christ Jesus. He says, God's got this abundance. He's got these riches. And he says, look, God's going to take care of me. He's going to supply all of my needs, maybe not all my wants, and maybe even my needs don't look like what I think they should look like, but God knows my needs, and He's going to supply from His abundance. He's going to take care of me. But lastly, Hannah never forgot to give God the praise that He deserved. Then Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord my horn is lifted, chapter 2, beginning of verse 1, high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance. There is no one holy like the Lord. There's no one besides you. There's no rock like our God. You know, it's often hard to see and understand what God is doing and why things seem to take so long. Working with teenagers, I used to say teenagers had tunnel vision. That they can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. All they can see is what's right here. But the honest truth is, I'm going to be 32 in a few days, and I still think in a lot of circumstances I have tunnel vision at 32. That I go through it and I can't see God's plan. And sometimes I don't think we're supposed to see it, because I think that teaches us a little word called trust. Dependence on God. Hannah acknowledged who God was. And just as she was confident that He heard her prayers and that He was at work, you and I can be as well. And although His timing may seem off to us, We don't know all that He knows. But God simply asks us to trust Him. His ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. They're higher than our thoughts. I think about, when thinking about the timing of God, I think about Jesus when He hears of Lazarus' death. Jesus waits. Lazarus is sick till death. Come, you can do something. Heal him. This is your best friend, for crying out loud. If it's my best friend and they call me, I don't care if it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I don't care what time it is. I'm getting up right then and I'm going, right? And Jesus says, no, let's wait. Let's wait. Jesus waits and lets Lazarus die. And when He shows up on the scene, Mary and Martha both kind of had the same thoughts. Like, if you'd have been here, our brother would be alive. You're late. What they didn't realize, Jesus was right on time. His timing doesn't work like ours. His timing is better than ours. And I have to remind myself, God, Your timing is superior than mine. You have a way and a thought that is higher than mine and better than mine. Hannah praised God for being a rock. We too can fully lean on Him. You know, the honest truth is this. Oftentimes when things are bad, that's when I want to go to God. And when things are good, I lean on myself. Do you ever struggle with that? When things are good, look at what I did. I'm a self-made man. I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and all of these different things. And the honest truth is, no, when times are going good, that's when I should be praising God. And when times are going bad, that's when I should be praising Him even more. Because the honest truth is, I don't have anything because of me. I have everything because of Him. Hannah realized that. He was her rock. She could fully lean on Him. In our ever-changing, hectic world, it may be difficult to know what or who we can truly trust anymore. But God is secure. He's our foundation. He's our solid rock. You know, with all the craziness that went on this last year, it's hard to know what to believe is the truth. You hear one thing from one source, another thing from another source, and it's hard to know what to believe. But I hope if there's one thing this last year has taught you is that there is one source that does not change. There's one source that we can depend on. There's one source that contains the truth and nothing but the truth. Our God is our rock. He keeps us steady. He's forever faithful. My prayer is that your hope is in Him, knowing that He will never fail and He is with you always through this life. And my prayer is that you can take something from the prayer life of Hannah that will strengthen your prayer life, that will strengthen your relationship with God, but that will also bless someone else's life. Sermons are not just about blessing, you know, feeding us spiritually, but it's then we take what we've been fed and we feed others with it. We share it with others. Just as Jesus took a small amount of food and fed the multitudes, I think we have the same ability spiritually to take a small thing in our minds and it can feed others, can feed multitudes because of the power of God's Word. Tonight, if you're not a Christian, we want you to have that hope. We want you to have this opportunity. We don't want an opportunity to pass without you. If you have that desire to having an opportunity to put on Christ tonight in baptism, if you're a Christian and you're struggling, we want to pray for you. No matter what the circumstance is, there's nothing too big or too small for our God. He knows what you need before He asks. He just simply asks of you to ask Him, to trust Him. If you have a need tonight, please come while we stand and while we sing.